what you heard.
The headlines: calls growing in Afghanistan for justice to be served in the case of a U.S. drone strike that wiped out an entire family in Kabul. A fresh warning from the Yemeni forces to foreign investors operating in the UAE: leave the country immediately. And Beijing says Washington's decision to suspend dozens of flights by Chinese airlines is not guided by reason. Welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are top stories this hour. No punishment yet for a U.S. military personnel behind a deadly drone strike in Afghanistan just days before their withdrawal from that country in August last year. How many Afghans, including the victims' relatives, want the Kabul strike to be regarded as a war crime? The U.S. drone strike left 10 Afghan civilians, including 7 children, dead. The U.S. military initially defended the attack, claiming the target was Daesh terrorists, but the Pentagon ultimately called it a tragic mistake following the release of airstrike video by the Central Command. Until now, no one has been held accountable for the carnage. Afghanistan says that the U.S. military has acknowledged such strikes as mistakes in the past, but their perpetrators were never brought to justice. Tens of thousands of civilians were killed by U.S. forces during their two-decade presence in Afghanistan. Now, Yemen's health minister says a death toll from the Saudi-led coalition's latest airstrikes on the country has risen to at least 82. According to the minister, another 266 people have been injured in the Saudi strikes, with many of them being in critical condition. Saudi warplanes bombed a prison in the northern city of Sada in the early hours of Friday, killing dozens of people. At least 3 children also died in a separate air raid on the telecommunications facilities in the western city of Hodeidah. The attack led to a nationwide internet blackout. Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015, killing hundreds of thousands of people there. Condemnations are pouring in over the Saudi-led coalition's deadly airstrikes on Yemen, with the UN chief describing the attacks as unacceptable.
Now, any bombardment that targets civilians or that is not careful enough to protect civilians is, of course, also unacceptable.
Guterres called for a prompt, effective, and transparent investigation into the airstrikes, which left dozens dead. Former leader of the UK Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, also censored the attacks and called for an end to arms sales to Saudi Arabia. He said they make London a complicit in the Saudi crimes. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah also condemned the raids as terrifying. It said that the Saudi-led coalition's attacks are aimed at covering up its failure on the battlefield. Meanwhile, Iraq's resistance groups in separate statements denounced the airstrikes as a massacre of Yemeni civilians. Welcome to this edition of the News Review. Now, a spokesman for the Yemeni army is warning foreign companies operating in the United Arab Emirates to leave the country amid an escalation of airstrikes. Yahya Sari says the UAE is no longer safe and investing there is highly risky for foreign firms. He says the UAE will remain unsafe as long as it continues to attack Yemen as part of a Saudi-led military coalition. The warning comes on the heels of a major drone strike by Yemeni forces deep inside the UAE last week. The retaliatory raid targeted three fuel tankers in Abu Dhabi, killing at least three people. Following that operation, the Saudi-led coalition launched hundreds of airstrikes on Yemen, hitting mainly civilian targets. Now, to discuss that further, we're joined by Brijsda Jonkers, a journalist, and of course, from the Yemen Resistance Watch. We also have James Thring, a peace activist, who is joining us. Let's begin with Mr. Jonkers. Now, why is Yemen asking foreign firms to leave the UAE? How do you believe foreign investors are going to react to this threat?
Well, I think the reason for Yemen to make this call upon foreign investors and foreign companies and even foreign inhabitants of the UAE to leave or to at least stay far away from any form of strategically important military or otherwise important target in the UAE is twofold. The reasoning is, first and foremost, I think Yemen wants to ensure that they minimize the potential possibility of civilian casualties upon a Yemeni strike against the UAE. And the way things are going now, it seems inevitable that Yemen will sooner or later, and I expect very, very soon, that Yemen will strike once again with missiles and drones against the UAE itself, because obviously the Abu Dhabi government hasn't listened to the warnings that were sent on Monday with the previous drone and missile strike, because they are still, you know, complicit, still collaborating and still actively participating in the war against Yemen. And secondly, the reason why Yemen does give such a warning against foreign investors in particular is because Yemen knows very well how to wage this war against a country such as the UAE. The UAE is a hub of international commerce and international trade. And in fact, without international global finance, this country would not prosper, would barely even, you know, exist as a modern state. So they know that Yemen doesn't have to destroy the United Arab Emirates, nor do they have any interest. But what they can do is hit them where it hurts, and that is in their pockets, in their wallets, in their finances. And when the UAE will be considered, if the UAE would be considered an unsafe country for investment, an unsafe country for commerce, for trade, then the entire premise upon which this country has been built up since the 1980s, basically, will collapse, because there will no longer be any possibility for the UAE to prosper as a hub of international trade and international finance. And this is something that the Yemeni people and the Yemeni resistance knows very well. And that's also why when they struck Abu Dhabi last week, they did not strike a target that is necessarily of military consequence. They did not strike a target that will maximize the amount of casualties or would kill the most amount of soldiers. What they struck was oil tankers. What they struck were areas that are of strategic economical importance, just to send a clear and obvious message saying, you know, you think that you might be safe because you live hundreds of kilometers away from Yemen, but what Yemen shows here is that just because you're far away doesn't mean that you're safe. Just because you're protected by American Patriot missiles, by an Israeli Iron Dome type of system, does not mean that you are safe from Yemeni retaliatory strikes. And that is exactly the message I think that Yemen is sending you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jonkers. Now, Mr. Thring, as Mr. Jonkers mentioned, Yemen is evidently trying to raise the cost of war for the UAE. The question is how enmeshed the UAE is in this war after claims that it was de-escalating its presence.
Well, you don't see that, but I really don't think that the apparent wagers of this war are the genuine causes of it. My view is that the Israelis are the chief purveyors of war and death in the Arab world generally, and the Muslim world generally. And I would say that while I've been watching this, I've noticed that they have a covert presence over in the skies and through the Saudis against the Yemenis in general, and that they are using their typical Mossad covert operations to incite attacks between the two religious groups and also between Yemen and its neighbors, Saudi and UAE. And the fact that they've targeted oil also suggests that the Israeli fear of oil states building up enough armory to attack them must be neutralized.
So, Mr. Thring, are you saying that the UAE doesn't care if this war has more cost on it, especially, as Mr. Juncker said, if it hits its pockets?
No, I'm sure the UAE is very concerned. I think they'd like to be out of it altogether, probably, but they're being brought in by this Israeli, well-known Israeli policy of putting your enemies against each other. Okay, the UAE is not quite as much of an enemy of Israel as some of the Yemenis are, but I think it's likely that that kind of what you might call sabotage is of no real value to either side, and it certainly isn't in the UAE's interest to further this war. It's a very vulnerable place. I don't know whether it's got an iron dome over it, but it obviously doesn't work. And they wouldn't want to frighten off their international investors, as was said earlier. That is an external policy by an external force, I would guess.
Thank you very much, Mr. Thring. Now back to Mr. Junkers, and I'm sorry because we're running out of time and I still have a couple of questions to ask. So quickly, Ansar Allah fighters have been making swift gains on the ground, as we just talked about it. They've been targeting areas deep inside Saudi Arabia, now recently inside the UAE. Do you think the attack on the UAE has opened up a new front in Yemen's war, tipping the scales in favor of Ansar Allah?
I think that is definitely the case. We know that Saudi Arabia has already been faced with very severe Yemeni strikes for and responses and retaliations for years now, not just in terms of drone strikes and missile strikes, but there are Yemeni forces within Saudi Arabia. They have been there for years in Jaizan and in Najran, in which several areas that Saudi Arabia occupied back in 1934 have now been seeing a lot of Yemeni retaliation strike on the ground. And so the interesting thing is there are Saudi activists and Saudi sources that have already been leaked through international media that have been basically calling on the UAE to basically withdraw from this war, because even the Saudi sources are saying that the UAE cannot bear the brunt of the attack in the way that Saudi Arabia has been taking hits by Yemen for so many years. Saudi Arabia as a country has been dealing with this situation, has been dealing with the fact that the Yemenis have been counterattacking so severely and so fiercely. But Saudi Arabia as a country can sort of resist that so far, but the UAE cannot. As a country, they are completely incapable of waging an actual war on the ground. And this is something that Yemen has now shown, I think, and this is a very important next step in the development, in which Yemen says, not only are we going to take back our own country, but we will strike back at your home front if you keep on attacking us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Junkers. Now, Mr. Thring, the last question. Now, there's also been a massive bombardment in Sada'a. Since you've given us a bigger picture of what's happening in that region, more than 80 people are dead. The toll will likely rise. The Saudi coalition is shrugging and saying that we didn't do it. Who did it then?
Well, again, I'm afraid the Israelis have to have been my first suspicion, because they've been behind the scenes in so many wars in the Middle East, Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Lebanon, Libya. If you read the books by Mossad, the Mossad officer Ostrovsky, you can see what they have been up to covertly all this time, and therefore I'm afraid they would be number one suspect in my investigation if I were to do one. So there it lies, and the evidence has sometimes come across when an Israeli jet has crashed and Yemenis have tried to hold the pilot and the Israelis have interfered and taken him away. The Israelis have been active in that region, bombing oil tankers and pretending it was somebody else, like the Iranians, for a long time. And so I'm afraid if it is an external force, it would be them.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. James Thring, peace activists joining us live from London, and of course, Mr. Paish Diyonkers, journalist from the Yemen Resistance Watch. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen for sharing your views on this edition of the News Report. Iran warns Israel is exploiting the United Nations mechanisms and other international bodies to cover up its daily crimes against Palestinians. In a statement, Iran's foreign ministry stressed that the regime has always tried to use victims of crimes in the Second World War to justify its atrocities against Palestinians. The ministry said the regime has subjected Palestinians to all sorts of violations, especially crimes against humanity. It said genocide, terror, and ethnic cleansing are just some of the crimes the regime is committing against Palestinians. The ministry further stressed that Israel maintains the same racist and expansionist ideology that triggered the crimes committed during the Second World War. Moving on to our next story, China and the United States are at odds again, this time on the suspension of each other's flights. The U.S. has suspended 44 flights by Chinese carriers, with the Transportation Department saying the move is in response to a similar decision by China. In recent weeks, Beijing suspended 44 flights by American Airlines after detecting positive COVID cases. Now, the Chinese embassy in Washington says such policy has been applied equally to Chinese and foreign airlines in a fair, open, and transparent way. The embassy says the U.S. measures is unreasonable, urging Washington to stop disrupting normal passenger flights. The two countries are at loggerheads on other issues, including the coronavirus origin and the trade and politics going on. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
aperture.
Situated in a relatively remote desert at the Negev Nuclear Research Center, the Dimona reactor is a heavy water-moderated natural uranium-fueled reactor. Most independent analysts believe that in the mid-1970s, Israel upgraded the installation to generate between 70 and 150 megawatts. Now that output makes it not only the region's largest reactor, but the sole evident producer of plutonium and tritium for nuclear weapons. And although Israel neither confirms nor denies its atomic arsenal, experts believe that it's been a nuclear-armed regime now for several decades. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. While the Zionist regime of Israel has maintained its decades-long policy of deliberate ambiguity about its weapons of mass destruction, its deadly arsenal is not the only danger threatening lives. The very existence of the Dimona is a terror haunting Jordan and Israel's other neighboring countries. A higher rate of cancer and the constant fear of possible malfunctions at the reactor are some of the worries that locals must deal with on a daily basis. And the Israelis are aware of the possibility of a meltdown at the Dimona reactor, a meltdown that would affect an area reaching Cyprus and the entire neighboring region. What makes these concerns even more pressing are satellite images of the Dimona reactor, which show that its walls have cracks which could cut its life by half. Join us this week's documentary exploring the threats that Dimona is posing on its neighbors.
Let's talk about Dimona. Many people say, well, nobody knows.
You see, I blush, you say Dimona and I blush. We're not supposed to talk about Dimona. But
why?
Go ahead. Because it's a taboo. It's a taboo, it's a secret.
Negev Desert, south of Israel. This mysterious complex, away from the public eye, employs thousands of people, all sworn to secrecy. When its existence was discovered, Israel said it was a textile factory, never admitting its true purpose, making plutonium for atomic bombs. We need answers, and we go to meet one of the few people in Israel that knows what is going on inside Dimona.
We are dealing with disarmament of weapons of mass destruction, meaning nuclear, chemical, and biological. We're the only NGO dealing with this right now in Israel. When you believe that these are the weapons that keeps you safe, when this is the common belief, then the question raised, are we the next country to use them? Israel is a nuclear armed state, chemical armed state, and biological armed state. Nuclear weapon is not a weapon that aimed at an army. It's a weapon that destroys a city. Are we willing to destroy any city in the Middle East? Mothers, children, fathers, citizens, not soldiers.
Want to know more about the most secretive nuclear program in the world.
Just transmitted at the request of the...
Is the Israeli nuclear plant at Dimona poisoning and threatening the lives of millions throughout the Middle East? From Tel Aviv, we go south. Our destination, Dimona. Approaching the nuclear plant is a high risk. Highway splices through the heat and sand of the Negev Desert. Barbed wire fence edges the road. Signs posted every few hundred meters warn drivers not to stop their vehicles under any circumstances.
They have cameras, they will see.
This is a military zone.
They said don't go off the road. It's a military zone, no Kentucky.
Finally, we can have a distant look at one of the world's most secret facilities. An exclusive view of a secret Israel is hiding since the 1960s. Dimona Nuclear Plant.
That's the gate. Go inside.
Only a few people in the world can say they know each corner of Dimona Nuclear Plant. All of them are sworn to secrecy. But there is someone that knows exactly how the building looks like.
It was a secret competition with the design of the civic center of a new atomic research center that was to be built in Dimona, in the south part of Israel. For security reasons, we couldn't call it a big center of research, what it was called, a civic center in the Negev. In the 60s, it wasn't such big news to have a textile factory in Dimona. So if you built something large in Dimona, you could very easily say, see, this is a textile factory. Only that this textile factory had a dome and very... wasn't typical of textile things, but it wasn't seen from the road. It was kind of an agreed quietness. I have the photograph while the project was being built, not when it was occupied. Then at that time, the security eye was not that strong. So I took the photographs. Later, many years afterwards, I all of a sudden got several photos from an unknown source, but with a stamp of the censorship. So I understood that somebody from the site sent me photos that were taken there. There's a sign that I can open my small portfolio and make it public. The courtyard of the main building, from the other side, looking towards the entrance, the detail of the stairs leading from the to the roof. You can have a roof cover, as you see here. You can go up to the roof under cover. There's a kind of...
This message is transmitted at the request of the Israeli Defense Ministry.
When President Kennedy took office, he knew from a CIA secret report that Israel was developing a nuclear program in the Negev. At the beginning of January 1961, Kennedy met the Israeli ambassador in Washington and expressed that the USA wanted to inspect Dimona to be sure about its purposes. Israel accepted, but under one condition, if it was done on a secret basis. For 5 months, the visit of the American inspectors to Dimona nuclear plant was postponed several times by Israel. Finally, an ultimatum from USA was accepted. Two American scientists were allowed to visit Dimona in May 1961. Israel imposed several rules on the American inspectors. They were not allowed to take any pictures or issue any comments about Dimona. When the inspectors finally entered the plant, they were misled. They were shown a fake control room on the ground floor. 12th of January 1961, the aim of the building built in the Negev was clear. In a high-level meeting between President Eisenhower and his staff, the US Secretary of Defense informs the president, based on intelligence findings, Israel was lying, and Dimona was not for peaceful purposes. They were unaware of the six floors below where the plutonium was made. In search of answers, we travelled to Berlin in Germany. Here we are going to meet Xanthe Hall. She is an expert in nuclear weapons and the director of International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. Xanthe Hall is also the coordinator of the European Parliament Commission Against Nuclear Proliferation.
The Israel Atomic Energy Commission is one of the most secret institutions in the world. It's responsible for Dimona, its chairman is Netanyahu, but it's not even officially recognized as existing. All the other nuclear plants in the world are monitored by the Atomic Energy Agency, but not the ones in Israel. So we think it's about time that Dimona was also monitored. The one thing that needs to happen is that an independent body like the IAEA would go into Dimona and find out what is going on there, what is the state of the substance of the building, is the containment of the nuclear reactor still intact, what are they doing about cooling, where is the nuclear waste being stored, how is it being stored, and all these questions, they need to be answered. We need some transparency.
Israel has not ratified the Non-Proliferation Treaty, a way of avoiding inspections to its nuclear sites.
First of all, we are not obliged. We are not part of the treaties. We never signed the treaties, so we don't oblige. We never said we won't. That's one thing. Second thing is the US. And the third thing is the Holocaust.
Oh.
Guilt. Do you see Germany? Germany sold us the submarines. The US, they let us steal uranium. You go to the UN, to the NPT, to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and you hear the US delegation reading their statements, and when they talk about Israel, you see paragraphs that you know from the language was written by Israelis.
So Israel has a special treatment?
Yes, we're a special case.
Yoshi Melman is known as an investigative journalist, specialized in intelligence and strategic affairs. He was described by WikiLeaks as an information mule who has exchanged tips with the Mossad. But in 2009, Melman uncovered a terrible secret about Dimona. Workers at the nuclear reactor facility were made to volunteer to drink uranium in 1998 as part of an experiment.
The workers themselves already cannot say anything. They have so many contracts saying that they cannot say. The question is the family. So usually in order for them to get compensation, the families also have to say they will not sue, they will not say, they will not speak to the media, and so on. So we know only when they have settlements, when the court say settlement, that they give some money, but we don't know how much usually, and we don't know how many, and we don't know what conditions. And also their doctors are only doctors that work with the commission.
I mean, if you only have a nuclear reactor that is making energy like Chernobyl or Fukushima, that's just one thing. You have lots of possibilities for accidents, but if you've got added to that, you've got uranium enrichment, you've got plutonium reprocessing, and you have actually the making of the warheads, then you have, you know, many more possibilities. Have there already been accidents? There's been some rumors and speculation that in 1966 there was a criticality accident at Dimona. We don't know what's been happening in that plant, and actually it seems that there's probably more secrecy than there was in the Soviet Union, because quite quickly after the Chernobyl accident it was actually said that there had been the accident. So I think Israel is more better to compare on the level of secrecy about a nuclear program with perhaps North Korea. because we know nothing about their program either. We do know that they have one, and at least North Korea is making claims that it has nuclear weapons, whereas Israel is pretending that it doesn't. So I'm not trying to say that there will be worse or better, but there are many more possibilities, so the risk is definitely higher.
Our next stop in search of answers about the Israeli nuclear program and its secrets is a Palestinian village. Daria, very close to Dimona, and a military field where Israel might be burying nuclear waste from Dimona. In Daria, a Palestinian doctor struggles to keep Dimona's victims alive. Cesium is not present in nature and can only be found in areas where a nuclear disaster or test takes place.
We know how cesium works on the body because of Chernobyl and Fukushima. Both of those accidents showed us a lot of about how cesium actually affects human health, and that there are claims that there has been a study that has found cesium in the region, and cesium is an indication that something has happened with a nuclear activity. It most likely would be, depending on the amount of it, would be from a nuclear accident, or it could be from leaking radioactive waste.
In some areas of Palestine, the presence of cesium is at the same levels as in Chernobyl or Fukushima, places where the worst nuclear accidents took place.
It's a radioactive isotope. It has a half-life of 30.2 years, and it acts like potassium or like salt. It's water soluble, so it can spread very quickly through the body, and it tends to concentrate then in muscle tissue, and you also have muscles in certain organs like heart and stomach and intestines, so that's where often cesium will end up, and at that point it starts then to mutate the cells within those muscles, and you end up with cancer of the colon, cancer of the stomach, of the lungs sometimes, and it can lead to heart disruption.
There are many rumors about where they bury the waste, but my, and not just my estimations, are that all the materials are buried in the area surrounding the reactor, and the reason is that these materials are secret. They don't want people to go and take land samples or go with Geiger.
The Geiger counter is an electronic device that measures the level of radioactivity. These devices are allowed for use everywhere in the world. It is sold everywhere, even online, but not in Israel. Despite claiming to be democratic, Israelis cannot buy a Geiger counter inside Israel.
One of the major problems that we have, again, it goes back to the secrecy problem, is that we can't even measure the amount of radiation in the area, because that's not allowed. And the Israeli law even says that if you take a Geiger counter into the area around Dimona and measure the radioactivity, you could be then sentenced to 15 years in prison. So nobody's going to do that. I know people even thought about doing it, but they didn't. It's certainly very risky to try to do any research on this at all, which is why number one problem is to get rid of the secrecy.
What is the security of Israel, and why the security of Israel is so different than the security of the people that live in Israel? And we hear rumors about buildings where the levels of cancer is unbelievable. And when we wanted to ask doctors, we also didn't get any answers. And one funny or sad answer we got was that we cannot measure the amount of cancer, radiation-related cancer in Israel, because we had so many people coming from Chernobyl, from Kiev, and that changed the numbers. So that was one answer we got. And of course, this is not a serious answer. People in Dimona are not rich, most of them. This is, if they were rich people, they wouldn't live next to a reactor, I guess. They wouldn't be depending on this reactor for their livelihood. A few years ago, they all got iodine pills that were very old iodine pills, and that was it. And they're not asking, and that's the problem, that they are more afraid to talk about it than the radiation.
But there are more cases around Palestine. In a small village lost in Al-Khalil Hills, there are other victims. One of them has already died. His son fears the consequences of telling his father's story and only accepts to talk if we protect his identity. This and many other cases come from the same region.
This is for a better life. For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You're welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Well, brothers and sisters, we are going to talk about trust and peace of mind. We know that we need trust and peace of mind together in order for us to live a happy life and a better life in this society. Because unless we build trust and unless we have peace of mind, we will not be able to live a life characterized by happiness, by well-being, by prosperity, and by peace of mind, by stability, and so on and so forth. And of course, man needs stability more than any other thing in his life, because his life is unstable, but he needs to build and create stability in his life. And obviously, those who engage themselves struggling to achieve goals without having a stable life, they will face failure and defeat in their lives. In fact, as one's in responsibilities increase, his need for stability and assurance also increases. Given this fact, it becomes the duty of everyone to learn how to avoid an anxiety and what measures he needs to gain peace of mind, to gain stability and a life characterized by tranquility and happiness. When we speak of tranquility, when we speak of happiness, we do not mean happiness gained by wealth, by material gains, and happiness gained by fame and other things which are materialistic, of course. Because there is no doubt as to the fact that struggling to acquire wealth, power, and fame, and other material gains does not ensure happiness in our life. No matter what you do, and no matter how much you struggle, all efforts made in this path will go to waste, because man's happiness lies in his own soul, just as his misery lies deep in there, you know. In other words, I would like to say that wealth, power, fame, and material gains do not ensure happiness. They do not earn an individual quality life. No matter how much wealth he gains, no matter how much fame he gains, and no matter how much reputation he builds, his happiness is not in these things. So it is in his soul. It is in his conscience. And medicine, according to Imam Ali, the commander of faithful, peace be upon him, is within man's own soul. The cure is within his soul. So we cannot find the cure and the medicine outside the human soul. It is within the human soul. Of course, the outside influences cannot ensure human happiness and cannot guarantee a better life. Money, wealth, and accumulation of these things cannot earn you happiness and salvation, because these are temporary things, and it is impossible that you achieve satisfaction with wealth and accumulation, because the more wealth you gain, the more money you accumulate, the greedier you become, and it is in the nature of such things. In addition, these things are temporary, they are not permanent. And therefore, they do not lead to complete satisfaction. Let's have a break. We will be back.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor, cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Happiness and good luck do not lie in power and ability as well, and they do not bring stability, they do not bring peace of mind, they do not create trust as well. There have been many people in the history who had actually power, who had the ability, but they lived miserable lives. Happiness does not lie in wealth and large amounts of money. There have been many rich people who were not happy even though they had vast wealth and treasures, Even today we come across many rich people, many wealthy people who have bungalows, who have markets, who have luxurious cars and houses, and who have luxurious lives, yet they live miserable lives. Their lives are full of tension, their lives are full of anxiety and full of apprehension. Their lives are characterized by uneasiness, by restlessness. Happiness also cannot be achieved by governmental power, by having governmental post or a political position. No. The Roman Caesars were unhappy despite their great power. They were the most powerful people of their times, They did not live a happy life. Actually, happiness cannot be achieved by acquiring all these things, all what I mentioned, Many people have had all the benefits of wealth, power, and fame, and so on and so forth, but they were not happy. The conclusion that I would like to draw is that man has to search for the means of real happiness in his own soul and in his own conscience. We must understand that the rapid increase in machinery is not enough to bring us a worry-free life, a concern-free life. The new machinery, the new advancements that we have made or that humanity has made is unable to reduce the amount of suffering in the world. We witness in today's life, man's life is full of machinery. We have everything that we need in our life. But even then, the sufferings of humanity have not decreased. There are new problems, there are new challenges and uncertainties in our life. And of course, in order to free ourselves from the continuous suffering of life, we definitely and we urgently need rightly guided minds. Just as the human mind, it has been actually able to bring about many advancements in our material living, it's also able to secure human happiness and a better life. So If you are looking for happiness, you should look it in your soul, in your mind. And it is here that the power of thinking becomes clearly manifested and shows its astonishing influence on man's life. So, in fact, those whose thinking abilities grow to become the center of their existence can steadfastly stand in the way of infliction when it befalls them by adopting a positive outlook, and therefore by building trust and peace of mind. Because when your mind is at rest, you will have an easy life, a better life. We need trust, we need positive thinking, and we need peace of mind. These should exist together in order for us to live a peaceful life. And peace of mind is the most important asset that we can have in our life. Unless we have peace of mind, we will never be able to live a prosperous, a happy life, a life divine and free of sufferings. Sufferings are there, but happiness will not be there unless we have peace of mind. That's all for this session. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.